I don't think that teaching is hurtful or inconsequential. I might think that teaching the curriculum as it currently stands is hurtful and inconsequential in a lot of ways, because the reality of it is that kids simply don't learn it for the long term. Well, hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Modern Learners Podcast. I'm Will Richardson, and that little snip that you just heard there may be one of the most dangerous things that I've said in a long, long time. It was part of a great conversation with my good friend and colleague, Bruce Dixon. We're back this week, just kind of throwing the ideas back and forth after a couple of weeks of some pretty interesting interviews. But this is one of those typical conversations where we kind of get started, the ball starts rolling downhill, and we just start saying things that maybe we have thought for a long time, but haven't really articulated. So I know you're going to enjoy this episode, number 29, believe it or not. Don't forget, too, that you can find Bruce and me and a whole bunch of other people at change.school. Our fourth Change School cohort starts in January, and we would love for you guys to be a part of it. If you go to change.school right now at the very top, you can fill out the form to be notified when our registration period opens, and that's going to be within the next couple weeks. So don't forget to check that out. And also head on over to changeleaders.community, which is our new online community for leaders from around the world. We have about 350 people in there right now who are talking about high bar change and sharing links and asking questions and doing a whole bunch of fun stuff that I know you would enjoy. Finally, on December 4th, we have our third webinar coming up. This one is on changing school culture from teaching cultures to learning cultures. And this one's going to be a little bit different in that we're going to have some live interactivity and make it more of a workshop. So you can head on over to any of our sites, the modernlearners.com site, to get more information on that. But for now, sit back and relax and enjoy this conversation between me and Bruce. And if you like what you're hearing, would love it if you headed over to iTunes and gave us a quick review and some feedback. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and we'll see you online. Well, Bruce, here we are again, buddy. We're streaming live to the world. This is the most exciting part of these podcasts. It has nothing to do with what we talk about. It's just that we have a technology now where we can do like live television. Even though no one's watching, it's just kind of cool to do that.
Yeah, we can just talk to ourselves, but imagine the world is watching. It's sort of, you know,
it's possible.
Not a sleight of hand, it's an illusion. But the simplicity of this technology just really boggles my mind because, as you said, so we've done that now. That's the end of the session. Broadcast.
We just wanted to get out there and go to the world and feel excited, and now we're done. So
that's right. Yeah.
Well, have a great night, Bruce.
Thanks very much. Good talking to you, man. So I've been traveling a little bit this time. You've been on the run. It's been a while since we've chatted.
We always start these podcasts just kind of catching up as the places we've been. So I think it's been a while though since we've had a conversation. You interviewed Conrad Wolfram, which was a great interview, by the way, a great podcast. Those of you who are joining us later on Facebook, watching the replay of this video, thank you for doing that, by the way. Make sure you go to the Modern Learners podcast on iTunes, because that conversation with Conrad was great. And you know that I'm not a math person. You are. You love math. I don't really like math that much. But I found that whole conversation really fascinating, to be honest with you. I just loved the things that he was saying, and I especially loved the way that he broke down kind of the four steps in terms of doing math and how we focus so much time on that computation piece of it when really it's the other stuff that matters. So that was really interesting. It must have been interesting for you too.
I love talking to him. I think he's quite an extraordinary person. So many mathematicians, I think, have difficulty in being able to convey, you know, difficult mathematic concepts to the broader population. I think Conrad's one of those geniuses who can parlay a lot of very complex ideas into very simple explanations. And I think that's what's made his thinking around computer-based math so powerful, because I think his message through initially his TED talk and now through the computerbasedmath.org website and the events he's running, I think are having a real impact because of his ability as a communicator. And I think he is having impact. I'm a little bit. I would like to see everything happening a lot quicker. Obviously, I think both of us talk about that in the work we do in Change School and Modern Learners generally. But it's a reality, and I think they are making headway. But I think the point about it is there's so little that you can disagree with about what he says. It just makes sense.
Yeah, and like I said, from a non-math standpoint, I just it helped me make a lot of sense of maybe why I didn't have such a great math experience, you know, because of just the emphasis there. And then actually, you know, just really fast, the podcast that I did with Joel Pelsiger from the Pluralism School was really fascinating for me too. I thought
I agree.
Thinking about the whole idea of mission in the context of diversity and you know, just working together to do big, hairy, change the world type of projects.
Yeah.
So those were a couple good ones. And I think we're probably going to do a couple more before the end of the year, but we've got already some people lined up to do more of those types of interviews for next year too. So
hopefully
looking forward to that.
Who are listening to this series, you know, like the diversity we give them. I mean,
yeah, but the downside is they don't get to see us live. That's the thing. And I know that's why most people show up, you know, because they have no lives and they're just waiting for us to appear in Facebook so that we can record our podcast. But anyway,
you can see people scheduling it, you know, just
yes. No, I know. So anyway, what are we going to talk about this week, Bruce? I think we were obviously always have a number of topics to choose from, but I think we decided to go with one that was a topic of the column you wrote, the Shifting Conversations column that you wrote this week. So,
yeah, well, I mean, it's one of those topics that I think a lot of when we write about it, you know, you can think, oh, you know, it's the same sort of space that we've been talking about for a long time. And when you start talking about, you know, I raised the question, are you a good learner? You know, you could say, well, goodness me, you guys have been talking that, you know, for years. We have. That's exactly right. But what about if you actually drill down on that at a personal level and ask yourself, firstly, what do you mean by a good learner? And whether you're looking at Saracen's definition of learning or however you want to tackle it, I think it is rather a lot more challenging to actually assess yourself as a learner than people might believe. And the exercise that I put through that Shifting Conversations column that we posted on the site this week was trying to force people to be a lot more reflective on their own practice, on exactly how they learn, in what ways do they learn most deeply and powerfully, which is the question we always ask teachers and ask about the students in their classes. And therefore, you know, what do you know about yourself as a learner? I don't think really that we talk about it enough, even though we talk about learning a lot. I don't think we talk about our own learning enough. And so, for instance, a good example, some people would say, oh, that person's a bad learner, or that person is a good learner. I don't even know what they mean by good and bad. Do they mean they have the ability to learn something rapidly, to learn complex ideas, to learn certain types of things and not other types of things, to learn in a certain way? You know, there's a lot of ways you can dissect that question. And I think if you don't have the ability to dissect that question and to think about it in a reflective way, then I can't see how you can make that sort of analysis with kids. I think you've got to be able to think more broadly about it.
Well, I think everyone's a great learner.
Yep.
I think everyone is a great learner just by their very nature. So it's interesting that we put this frame of good or bad around it, because when we do that, what we're doing is obviously contextualizing it within the frame of school.
Yep. That's right.
I mean, nowhere else really. I shouldn't say that. I mean, in the workplace and some other places too, I guess we're evaluated on our ability to learn and how quickly we pick things up and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But we do that to such a great extent in schools that I think a lot of people argue to the point where it's detrimental to kids, because it does pigeonhole them into certain narratives around who they are, what they can do, what their potentials are, all that type of stuff. You know, this is, if you know, if we're honest about it, this is a pretty dicey conversation to have in the context of educators, right? Because the reality of it is, if we're going to be honest, I'm not sure how good teachers are at being learners.
How about
I You know, I have talked to a number of people, number of superintendents, number of just, you know, people who have had me come speak at their schools, and they've said things like, you know, my problem is I have a group of people on my staff who just don't read. I have a group that really isn't that engaged in learning about education or in keeping up. And so I guess, again, it's not that they're not learners, but it's that they're, for some reason or whatever reason, not really too interested in learning about learning. They have their own things that they want to, pursue. But if you're an educator, you should be learning about learning. Mm-hmm. I think that should be your kind of area of expertise. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, how often do we reflect on ourselves as learners? I think by and large, educators do, when they do reflect, they're reflecting on themselves as teachers.
Mm-hmm. Great point.
Not reflecting on themselves as learners. So that's a little bit of a head shift for people to put themselves in that position. And I mean, you know, I mean, I ask the question all the time of kids when I'm in schools, you know, how do your teachers learn? And they don't know. They don't see the adults as learners. We're not transparent about our learning.
Yep.
It's not our role. It's not our kind of, you know, the persona that we have. And yet I think you and I would agree, and I think certainly Saracen and others would agree, that we have to be learners as adults right now, and we have to be really transparent around that. So as much as it shouldn't be for some people in education, seeing themselves as learners is a pretty big shift. it's a difficult one for them to kind of wrap their brains around.
Isn't it funny that you laughed as you said that? Because it does seem such a paradox that people...
It does.
You just go, you can't be serious. But it's a reality. It's an absolute reality. And it's that, I guess, that point that we're leading to, which we're going to be discussing in the webinar coming up next week.
December 4th. Yeah.
December 4th. Talking about moving from a teaching culture to a leading culture.
A learning culture. Yep. And I just want to say too, you know, we're not throwing all educators under the bus. There are lots and lots of educators who are passionately learning about learning, and who are, one of the things that I think has been really interesting over the last few years is just the explosion of ed camps, the explosion of online networks and communities and sharing. So certainly there are lots and lots of people, and the people who are listening to this podcast probably are among those people who are learners.
Absolutely.
They listen to us hopefully because we challenge their thinking, and because we make them kind of see the world a little bit differently, or see their own practice a little bit differently. So you know, I'm not sure, we're probably preaching to the choir to some extent here.
Yeah.
But you did go through some steps in that column that I think were kind of interesting, that might be helpful just to run through a couple of those or talk about those kind of at a meta level, because I thought it was a good way of framing the type of reflection and the type of things that we could do with teachers in schools to get them to think more about their own learning.
Yeah, and I think before I just mention a couple of those, I as you were just talking then, I was very mindful of one of the comments that Conrad Wolfram made in the podcast, which really caught me when we were talking about literacy and numeracy, and he said, you know, it's funny when you think about literacy and what it means to be literate, he said, but how would it be if kids came out of school and the only things they were able to read were the books they were taught to read, and they couldn't do anything else with their literacy? They couldn't be literate in other areas. And it was that sort of, he was talking about it obviously in the context of numeracy, you know, it's almost like for some people, the notion of mathematics is being able to solve certain problems in a certain way, and that's all you can do. But the learning isn't about problem solving. It's about a series of steps you take in a very limited context, which is what you're talking about.
Right.
And too often, so much of what we have done in the past in schools has been about that. It's about learning a sequence of steps, but not thinking right about the broader underlying concepts and how those concepts can be applied in different contexts. And that's what learning really looks like. So that's when I sort of took through and said, well, you know, think of something that you've learned recently at a personal and then at a professional level. And, you know, personally, it could be anything. It might be something you've done in sport. It could be, you know, you might be learning something, an interest you have in a particular area. It might be around a musical instrument even. You know, how do you learn that? And what were the, you know, what was the context that allowed you to do that learning? And then at a professional level, you know, what was something that you've learned recently? And then were there any differences between those? And then being able to, I think the most important part of these questions was then being able to share that process that you went through in your learning with colleagues, with your peers. Think about it. What was it about that made that register that worked for you? Why were you able to learn in that way? Would you have preferred to learn in another way? Were there things about the learning that made it more meaningful to you, that allowed you to gain the knowledge in a better way? I mean, in the sort of, you know, in a completely different context, you know, Papert talks about the ability to be able to learn mathematics in the same way we learned a language. So he talks about Mathland, you know, being able to think about mathematics in Mathland rather than as an isolated, you know, problem written on a page in a textbook. And then, you know, then I think we sort of, you know, really have to think about, well, what's the flip of that? You know, when do you have trouble learning? You know, why do you have trouble learning something in a particular way? And what is it about the context or the conditions that make that learning a challenge for you? And how do you work with that? Do you change the conditions under which you're learning? And a lot of it's got to do, for instance, with the extent to which you're applying your learning, how you're applying your learning, the context in which you're applying your learning, or is it, just to go back to the where we started, is it just simply a rote learning where you've just got to memorize something, which has unfortunately been too much of a focus of a lot of what we've done in school in the past. And I think that, you know, as an exercise, particularly amongst a group of educators, I think it's a really interesting process to go through, because I think it helps people think of tangible ways in which they have done their learning, where they have had their problems, and then think about, well, what does that mean for the students that I'm working with? You know, maybe there are some things I need to think about in terms of the conditions that optimize learning for them that I should be really concerned about. And maybe there are things that in the conditions I have within my classroom that I should change that would help them be better learners and engage more deeply and powerfully in the learning that takes place.
So, I mean, and at some level, that's the frustration that I have with this whole conversation, is that I don't think it's rocket science. Correct. I just don't think it's that hard.
Absolutely.
And because if you ask those questions, which I think it's a great process to go through, because I don't, like you said, I don't think that a lot of people get meta enough on their own learning, especially in education. So to really think about that and go through, I think though, at the bottom of all that, once you peel all that stuff away, why did you learn it? What was easy about it? What was hard about it? I think at the bottom of it, almost all of it is about engagement. Almost all of it is about, does it make sense? Is it something I want to learn more about? I know we talk about this with Saracen all the time, but I really have gotten to a point where I'm a little scared to say what I believe about teaching in the context of how it impacts learning, because I just don't know any longer the extent to which a teacher can impact student learning in the sense that we talk about it, in the sense of learners having the agency and the freedom to pursue the things that they really care about and, you know, to become just better learners, more literate learners in the process of pursuing those things. That's not to say, as you suggested, that teachers don't have an impact on that. They certainly do, but it's not explicit. To me, it comes down to what you just said about creating those conditions, right? And to making classrooms places where kids can, at the end of the day, really get to that engagement piece, because that is those are the only things that we really learn. The only things that we really learn at the end of the day.
But I know what you're saying, and people listening to this podcast, you know, will have heard us talk about this before, written about it, and it is in some ways such an obvious and simple idea. But isn't it very much also though related to us being able to trust trust learners, to be able to trust learners, trust them as learners, that they will.
Oh, no doubt.
And that's, I mean, Gary, you know, one of Gary Steger's, you know, comments, I think, is something like,
there's our Gary Steger mentioned, by the way.
We have
to get our Gary Steger mentioned in every time. But anyway, what's something?
more them, less us, he says. Something
that's right.
Like that.
Right.
And yet, the minute I say that, I know some people listening to this podcast, oh, you say teachers aren't important, or you say teachers shouldn't. And no, that's not the point at all. And the reason that resonates with me, I've got to say, well, absolutely, is because when I was teaching, that was me. Now, why was I able to do that? Firstly, it was hard initially for me to understand this, but I, you know, every time that I was questioning myself about how much I should trust my students as learners, you know, I would reflect very much on what was happening, and I'd reflect on some readings and what other people were saying. And over time, I certainly was able to build up that trust in my students as learners, but also, you know, didn't feel that I was, taking myself completely out of the process. I wasn't minimizing or trivializing my role as a teacher. What right. I was actually doing was empowering my students, which was far more important.
So I'm going to do our evening reading
evening
tonight.
Reading.
Yes, our evening reading.
I'll,
because
I'll just adopt position.
Something. Something.
Probably,
there you
I
go.
Probably should have
changed. Yes, there you go. So one of the books that I've been kind of digging into lately has been Carl Rogers' Freedom to Learn.
Right.
Which, you know, I figured I should read it because, you know, I ripped off the title for my own book. But he has a section in here really fast where it's a section called Personal Thoughts on Teaching and Learning. And this was an address that he gave to a conference. And he starts it out by saying, look, this is going to be really kind of edgy, and I'm not really sure that I'm comfortable saying this stuff, but here's what I think. So I'm just going to read a little snippet of this, but it's really interesting. He says, it seems to me that anything that can be taught to another is relatively inconsequential and has little or no significant influence on behavior. That sounds so ridiculous, I can't help but question it at the same time as I present it. But he says, I realize increasingly that I'm only interested in learnings which significantly influence behavior. And I have come to feel that the only learning which significantly influences behavior is self-discovered, self-appropriated learning. Such self-discovered learning truth that has been personally appropriated and assimilated in experience, cannot be directly communicated to another. Which, you know, well, I mean,
quite a rep demonstrandum. That's right.
And, you know, and he says something down here at the end too, where he says, I realize I have lost interest in being a teacher, and I have come to feel, this is the part where I'm scared to go here. And so this is only for people in the podcast. It's a good thing. We have six people watching us, by the way, on Facebook right
cool.
now. Bob Fuhrer, how are you, buddy? Glad to have you with us.
Thanks, man.
Glad you're out of the tractor. he says, hence, I have come to feel that the outcomes of teaching, I'm scared here, are either unimportant or hurtful. Now, you know, I don't know that I would go, you got to mute it, Bruce. If you're going to watch us online on Facebook, you're going to have to mute Facebook. Otherwise, you're going to get all screwed up and the podcast is going to get all messed up. but, you know, I mean, not, I don't think that teaching is hurtful or inconsequential. I might think that teaching the curriculum as it currently stands is hurtful and inconsequential in a lot
That's
of ways, because the reality of it is that kids simply don't learn it for the long term.
Yep.
Now, this goes back again to this whole debate about, you know, we're kind of winding off the path here a little bit, losing the plot here a little bit, but it does go back to that whole idea of, well, what does every kid need to know? What do we need to teach? All that type of stuff. But just to wind it back, right? It's unsettling when I hear people say that teachers don't read, or they don't keep up, or they're not invested, because what that means to says to me is that they're not engaged in their work. Mm-hmm. Because if they were engaged in their work, I think they'd be constantly challenging themselves, constantly looking for new ideas, constantly pushing their thinking. And let me make one more point, and then I'll let you chime in on any of that I just said, which is a whole bunch of big stuff. But the other part was, you know, when you were talking about conditions, and it is to me about conditions and Papert says that, Dewey says that, Einstein apparently said that, other people have said that, you know, a teacher's job is really simply to create the conditions under which learning can occur.
Yep.
Saracen, though, also makes the point that if those same conditions don't exist for teachers, then they will not work. They will not be effective if they're just the conditions in the classroom. And that's where we get to this idea about culture that we're going to talk about in a couple of weeks. And it, you know, that whole idea of moving from a teaching culture to a learning culture is definitely wrapped up in everything we've just been talking about, but it is about the conditions that exist for teachers. And I will tell you, in most places that I go, they are teaching cultures, and those conditions for teachers in terms of them as learners don't exist. The conditions exist for them as teachers, but not learners. And I think that's a really interesting distinction we're going to talk about in a couple of weeks that I can't wait to just dive into that a little bit more.
No, I agree with you, Will. And by the way, Linda Rashida, who we know, and also want to welcome Basil and others who are watching us on Facebook. Linda, thanks.
Many of our Change School alumni. Yay.
Fantastic.
They're back for more.
So, you know, Linda asks here, you know, how do we as teachers collectively create the conditions to engage students with agency and meaningful and deep learning? And but transfer that across, as you just said, across to teachers. I mean, how much time do you think we devote to trying to produce those conditions for teachers? Let's, you know, in a really crude way, what we've traditionally done for teachers is said, hey, look, there's a workshop coming up. You want to go to that? I'll put a replacement teacher in. Off you go. Do the workshop. Come back. That's about as far as we've ever gone. What we've said is providing the conditions is sending someone to a sort of off-campus thing, an off-site thing.
Yeah.
There's no ongoing, there's no commitment to self-directed learning, to self-managed, to teachers as self-directed learners. There's no commitment to an ongoing learning process. It's been an episodal approach to it. And so in many ways, we've actually created the conditions that undermine the role of teachers as learners, because we've sort of said, you go and take this little box, this little time out, and that'll be your learning time. And it almost compartmentalizes it, you know, the piece between now I'm a teacher, now I'm a learner. And most of the times I'm a teacher, which is so artificial and constraining into helping teachers think of themselves first and foremost as learners.
I think I totally agree with you. And I think that it is all about culture. And Linda asks, you know, how do we change that? And it's hard. It's really hard. I think that because at the end of the day, again, it comes down to freedom for teachers as well as freedom for students. I mean, Freedom to Learn was a great title to rip off, because it is about that, you know.
Yeah.
It's about being able to pursue the things that we really care about.
Yeah.
But, you know, I sometimes think that we create these issues or problems in schools because we don't want to deal with the simplicity of what we're talking about.
That's interesting. Sorry, just hang on for a second. I think you're right on the nail. I think you've really hit it on the head there. You're right.
It's not right. This isn't hard stuff to figure out.
Not at all.
But what's really hard is the whole power piece of it that goes with it, you know, and giving kids freedom means relinquishing power. And this was a tweet that I sent out today, right, about empowerment and how that word tweaks me. You know, I mean, you know that I'm nutty when it comes to language, right?
I know I dropped it before, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, and no. But still, if we empower learners, that means that
we deliver it to them.
Well, we have power to give, and that means we can take it away. And you know that. That's for another day, right? But it is this idea that we build these narratives, these stories, these systems and these structures, I think as a way of trying to make it so complicated and murky, because we just can't deal with the simplicity of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? It just makes us feel better if we have to struggle with all these structures and stuff. And you know what I mean? It gives us like something to do.
I want to come back to that issue about this simplicity that you've highlighted, because I reckon you're right on the money. And I want to just tell a quick story. It was I won't say who, but it was a very close family member, I'll just say. Just over the weekend, I was at a dinner party talking about a nine-year-old boy who's related in a long way. He's a reading refuser. Now, I didn't know about this. It's a long time since I've seen these people. Well, you would have thought they were going to get, you know, every government agency in the world in, every diagnostician. They were going to do every bit of assessment they could about this kid, about why he was a reading refuser. Now, I actually know a little bit about this stuff. I mean, that was where one of my specialties was in that area. And I was staggered. I was actually aghast at how they were talking about how they as parents and grandparents, by the way, and how the school and the system was going to deal with this young child who is an intelligent kid, has no physiological issues, and for a number of reasons, some of which I may know, has become a reading refuser. I was, you know, it was everything that was the opposite to what you just said, because you have to ask yourself, why is this child a reading refuser? Well, he's a reading refuser not because he's not capable of reading. Has he been given the right conditions to become a reader? No, not at all. Is he capable of becoming a reader without having 20 interventions from all sorts of agencies and 100 tests done on him? 100% yes. Now, I'm not just guessing this. I'm not just saying this theoretically, because one of the schools I was involved with for a number of years, for a number of reasons, we had quite a large number of kids like that with us. And the thing that I learned to do with these kids more than anyone, and I think Linda or Bob made a comment of it in the Facebook comments, was trust the child.
Right.
That I had a child come to me who was actually 11, who was had been told by the local, I won't name it, but it was, let's just say, a systemic school, local school, that you'd never read. Never read. And let's just say the parents belong to that system, if you get where I'm going. It's obviously a religious system. And so they were very faithful to the system and believe what the school was telling them. Now, did I create a miracle? Because I won't tell the whole story, but the child ended up being a great reader. No, in the end, what I had to do was stand back, understand where the kid was at, understand the context in which she was thinking about reading, and, as you've said many times, create those conditions that made it possible for her to see herself as firstly a learner, secondly as a reader.
And you know, the other thing, just really fast, the other thing that kills me about stories like that, and we all have them.
Yep.
I can tell you, I can give you a dozen of them, right?
Yep.
And the thing that kills me about it is we all have them. We all have those stories. And and yet, you know, we just don't, you're right. I think it's a lot about trusting kids, and it's a lot about giving up, trusting ourselves too, you know, to that nurturing and that support and that making connections for kids, and again, creating conditions under which those types of connections can happen, that will be enough. We are so twisted around this idea that if we don't teach it in this way, in this pace, in this method, with this, you know, we're so just tied to that idea.
Yeah.
And I think we do kids a disservice in many cases, because we don't give them that freedom. We don't let them simply explore and develop and learn in the ways that are very natural to them. And I don't know. We've kind of, you know, gotten off on a little tangent there, but I think this is now, and it still comes back. And I know, you know, we sound like a corrupt MP3 when we start talking about this over and over and over. Like that? You like that? It was pretty modern update of the broken record thing. But anyway,
oh my goodness, great.
but you know, and we just sound like a broken record when we start talking about this stuff. But you know, we all know that learning happens when it's thing about something that we care about, and learning doesn't happen when we don't care about it.
Yeah.
No investment, no learning. I mean, I don't know how much simpler it can be.
That's right.
So we can, you know, we can try as hard as we can to, you know, dress it up and make it look pretty and, you know, incentivize kids in all different types of ways and whatever else we do to try to get them through this curriculum that we have in front of us. But at the end of the day, if there isn't an investment on the part of the learner, and the thing is, we all know that because that's our lives too, you know, and that goes back to what you were talking about before, reflecting on our own learning.
Yep.
You know, you didn't learn stuff you weren't invested in. And so if you want to be, being a good learner is really just about pursuing things, finding things that you really care about, and, you know, then creating the conditions on your own. As adults, that's our job, right? We have to create our own conditions for that learning to happen.
Absolutely.
And so we do this, and we meet, you know, make community online. We go to local, you know, hackathons or whatever, if that's what we're into. We find all those places where we can pursue the things that we want to pursue. So,
and we do have the freedom to learn.
When we have agency. As adults, we have agency.
That's right.
That's right.
And what's interesting, just to bring it back, because I know we're probably coming to the end of our time for a chat today, but it brings back the point you made very early, and that was that all of us have the potential to be great learners. And all of us... And
well, not even the potential, though. We are great learners. We are great learners.
But what we are, you're right. We are great learners. But it comes back to the Shifting Conversations post I did a couple of weeks ago, which I'm driven with a passion towards, and that is the notion that, you know, the exception to becoming the rule. That I, too often, and we talk about this a fair bit too, too often I've seen kids, and I talked about Craig was one example, but I can name literally dozens of kids by name who have come out of our system, traditional school system, who do not see themselves as learners. And it is a tragedy. It is an absolute tragedy. These aren't kids who have got a physiological issue. They have the capacity to, they are great learners, and they've proven they're great learners, what they've done with their lives after the fact, once they've left school. And that's why I gave the examples I did.
Right.
You know, what have they done? If schools branded them as a school, as a learning failure, which is how Craig came out of school and a number of the other kids, they saw themselves as a learning failure, then presumably they're going to end up on the streets with not capable of doing it. Well, that's not what happens. These kids are great learners. And all they had to do was find their passion, find what it was that was of interest to them. And as you said earlier, that they could engage with, that was in a context that provide the conditions for them to learn best. And guess what? They're incredibly successful.
And let's just, you know, let me just say at the end here that it's not quite as simple as that. Right. It's not quite as simple as just saying, well, find your passion and you'll be okay.
Yep.
I don't want to, you know, leave the impression that we have no role in this.
Yep.
But my point is that I think we need to start there and then figure out what our role is, rather than really defining our role and then, you know, making kids just kind of deal with it. I think we have to deal with where kids are, and this isn't anything new or profound, but we have to deal with where kids are rather than making them deal with where we are.
Yeah.
We both have roles to play. I think teachers and educators can be amazingly positive influences on kids' lives and their learning lives and all of that stuff. It could be, and it is in many cases, really powerful. But too often, I think we just lose a lot of kids because it's just not what they're about. We're not starting where they are. And and I think that's where we have to change it now, especially, and just the last point, because that's where the world is now. You know, the world is now, I can learn about whatever I want to learn about. I don't need you any longer, really. You know, if you're going to make me sit in a classroom drilling me and training me on stuff, not teaching me, but just training me to do stuff that I'm not really finding any value in. That's not a good situation at all anymore, especially kind of with that option of pursuing what I want to pursue. So anyway.
So I think that hopefully what people have, you know, enjoyed the podcast. If you want to take staff or your faculty through the activities we put in the Shifting Conversations, you'll see that inside the community.
And we held on to 6 people throughout this whole thing, Bruce.
Fantastic.
I mean, I that may be a record. I don't know. I'll have to check the Nielsen ratings for this week. I think we're right up there with I don't even know what's on TV anymore. Yeah, thank you. I was gonna mention I don't even know. I can't even name a TV show.
Yeah, you corrupted MP3 was just a little bit too.
Yeah,
that I was think right on the money.
Right, left the money.
Yeah.
All so, right.
Yep. Good to
well,
catch.
Well, let me just say if you guys are still with us here at the end, please come and join us in Change School. Our fourth cohort starts in January, and you can sign up to be notified for registration. On our change.school page, and also visit us at changeleaders.community, which is our new, it's been a long conversation. Changeleaders.community, which is our new online space. And also December 4th, the webinar, if you go to Modern Learners, you will see a link to sign up for the workshop. We hope to have a few hundred people in interactive conversation about how to change culture from teaching culture to learning culture. So we're really looking forward to that as well. But anyway, you don't celebrate Thanksgiving, do you, Bruce?
No.
You don't kill birds and eat them.
We can now. We can talk about the power of the internet. We can actually celebrate Black Friday and Cyber Monday.
Oh, great. Well, that's good. I'm glad that you got the best part of the holiday down in Australia. Oh, that's so sad. I'm going to be depressed for the rest of the night. But anyway, for those of you who celebrate, happy Thanksgiving, everyone. And we'll see you
in 2 weeks.
Here's Bruce. Good talking to you.
Likewise, man.